Issues, Vermont Voices. Equal time with Anthony Polina and you.
You poisoned my sweet water.
Hello and welcome to Equal Time Radio. This is Amy Schallenberger and I'm your host for today. Before we get started today, I want to ask listeners to please give us a like over on Facebook. If you are on Facebook, just type Equal Time Radio into your search bar and click on like when the page comes up. Both Travis and I are posting upcoming shows and also the podcast, so you can stay up to date on what's happening with Equal Time Radio. Today, we're going to be talking about Vermont's primary election, which is coming up on August 26th. You might know that you can already request an early ballot or vote at your local town clerk's office. We're going to be talking with Secretary of State Jim Condos in just a few minutes about the primary election, early voting, and a whole lot of other issues relating to elections. A little bit later, we're also going to talk with candidate for Lieutenant Governor Dean Corin about his campaign, public financing, and how the primary elections might affect his chances in the general election against incumbent Phil Scott. If you have a question for either of these guys or you'd like to join in the conversation, you can call 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Secretary Condos, are you there on the line?
I am, Amy. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, and I do have to give you a little bit of a caveat at the beginning that if I start coughing, I'm okay, but I just have apparently some summer allergies that I'm fighting these days, and sometimes I start coughing, and I might take a second just to catch my breath.
Okay, well, thanks for the warning. I'm sure there's plenty of listeners who have the same problem today. So why don't you just start by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about what you do as the Secretary of State.
All right. First of all, I am Vermont's 38th Secretary of State, and I've been in office since 2011, January of 2011. As you know, Amy, but as maybe many of the listeners don't, I served in the State Senate for 8 years, from 2001 through 2008. And I also served on the South Burlington City Council for 18 years, where I chaired the committee, the council for about 8 years out of those 18 years. And when I was in the State Senate, I chaired House Senate Government Operations, which meant that I chaired the committee that actually oversaw the Secretary of State's office. The Secretary of State's office actually has four main functions. The first one, of course, is elections, and we're going to get into more about that as we go. The second one is the State Archives and Records Management Unit. that's out at Middlesex, Vermont. And we handle all the state's primary documents and most precious documents, as well as work with state agencies and local agencies as far as managing their records. Then I have the Office of Professional Regulation, which oversees 46 different professions and approximately 60,000 license holders. And my last group is Corporations Division, which is where business comes to start. When they want to start a business in Vermont, they register with our office. They do annual report filings to maintain their records, their position, and we also handle UCC credit liens for a lot of the major firms from around the country. So it's a big job, and we've been busy at work trying to maintain those positions and do it within our budgets. And one of the things that I would like to report on is that as of the FY 2014, The office no longer receives any general funds. We actually operate from the funds that we collect in fees, and anything left over gets swept into the general fund. So we have reduced our general fund allotment from 1.5, 1.6 million down to zero.
That's great.
So that's pretty much where we are at this point.
So you have a big office and a fairly big staff over there, and you're covering a lot of things. And today we're only going to dive into elections, although all of those different departments are very interesting over there at the Secretary of State's office. And before we get too far in, I just want to let listeners know that if you want to find anything that we're talking about here, the Secretary of State's website has actually been revamped. So if you've been there in the past and been frustrated, I want to encourage you to try again. And if you want to go there, you can go to www.sec.state.vt.us.
And thank you for that plug. We're pretty proud of it. It was approximately a three-year project, but we finally got it completed this past spring. And we're all pretty excited because it's much more user-friendly. It's much better organized and much easier, as I said, for the users to find things on it.
Well, as somebody who uses your website quite a bit, I really appreciate the time and effort you've put into changing that a little bit, making it more user-friendly. So let's talk about the primary election. It's coming up on August 26th. And I was hoping you would just start by briefly describing what a primary election is and how people vote in a primary.
Sure. First off, a primary election is Tuesday, August 26th, and the polls will open between 5 and 10 a.m. You need to check with your local town clerk to find out exactly which time they're opening, but they have to open by 10 o'clock at the latest, but they're allowed to open as early as 5 a.m. All polls do close at 7 p.m. The primary election is really a party function. It's not really a state election, but we do manage it for them. But it's essentially a party election for where they are deciding on the final pieces of their general election ballot. So, for instance, in this year's race, you've got, I think, three people running for governor on the Republican ticket, and I think there are two on the Democratic ticket. At the end of the day, we'll know which one goes forward for both of those parties. There are four major parties now. We have the Republicans, the Democrats, the Progressives, and the Liberty Union. There are very few races this time around. But I think, and this actually portends to what's going to happen with the vote, because the vote we expect to be very light. This is a non-presidential year, and the fact that there are no U.S. Senate seats on the ballot, so the highest seat is the House of Representatives, which is currently the incumbent is Peter Welch. That means that the fact that this is going to be a low turnout means that every vote is probably more important than ever, because when you have a lower turnout, every vote counts. And you know, we've had cases where in the last few elections, 2010, we had five Democratic candidates for governor on the Democratic side, and the top three positions were separated by about 700 votes. Last year, in the Progressive race, there was a write-in campaign, and that was very close. And so it really does, your vote counts more than ever when the turnout is going to be light, because you have a bigger say.
So when people go to vote in the primary election, do they have to publicly declare which party they're voting for?
No, they do not. That only occurs at the primary, the presidential primary election every 4 years. In this case, what you will receive, excuse me, what you will receive when you check in at the polls is you will receive four ballots, one for each of the parties, and you will be instructed to vote on only one, and then when you check out at the end, you will process one ballot into the machine, and the other three will go into a discard pile.
And how do the elections officials check that you've only voted for one? They just watch that you only turn one in on the counting
correct.
Machine?
Correct.
So nobody knows even when you turn your ballot in which party you voted in?
They're not supposed to.
Okay. So I wanted to check. I know the primary date is changing for the next election. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. In 2016 election cycle, the primary date will actually be moving up about 2 weeks to the second Tuesday of August. And that's in order to really make sure we have enough time here in our office to, in case there's a recount, to develop the new the general election ballot in time to send out the overseas and military vote, which has to go out 45 days ahead of time. So it's going to be moving up by 2 weeks.
But that's not this year. This year, the election, the primary election, is August 26th. Just so
this
everyone
year
knows.
This August 26th, it's Tuesday, not- August 26th. And frankly, people can vote. They can vote now if they want to. You know, vacations should not enter into the picture because you have, starting on July 11th, any registered voter could request a ballot from their town clerk, whether in person, by phone, or by mail. And as long as they submit that absentee or early vote ballot to their town clerk's office by 5 p.m. on the close of business on the as long as they return that thing by 7 o'clock on voting day, their last request would be on at 5 p.m. or close of the town clerk's office on the day before the election. So it is important, and it does offer, people do have plenty of time to cast their ballot.
So you mentioned that the primary elections are actually a function of the major parties.
Correct.
Less than the, not so much a function of the state, but why do the parties have to have these primaries?
Well, this goes back to the early 1900s. Prior to, and I don't recall the exact date, it was like 1917, 1918, the parties had caucuses or conventions in which they would choose their candidates. But around 1917, 1918, it was changed, and they went to the party election process, the primary process. And it's been that way ever since. So we're closing in on 100 years of having it as a primary election. There have been discussions from time to time by various parties to maybe they want to switch to a caucus or a convention, but I think, and then there's others that say that the primary is the proper way to do it. So I think it really comes down to it's a final decision would be made by the legislature. They would have to make any changes to the law if we were to change things, but this has been the way it's happened for about 100 years.
And how do you win a primary?
How do you win a primary? That's a good question. I was involved in a primary in 2010. I think it's really about getting out people that support you to vote. And I think that's what each candidate does. And it's something that you work with your party sometimes to help get the vote out. But it's really about getting the vote out.
So that's true. I understand that. But my real question was, what do you need to win? How are the winners determined?
Oh, the winners are determined by the person who has the most votes.
And if there's
primary.
More than one.
So if it's a governor's race, you've got to have the most votes over your second place finisher. And just like it is in a regular primary, a regular election. And the election itself, the primary election, is run the same way. Except that we're really running four different elections in the space of one day. I mean, we're running, there's an election for the Republican ticket, there's an election for the Democratic, and so on. So it's really, you know, when we get to the general election, we're really only running one election at that point.
Right. So if, for listeners out there who might be seeing a down ticket race in their primary election, if they have, say, like in Washington County where I live, there are three senators. So if there are more than three running in the party that you are voting in, you pick three and the top three win.
That's correct.
Yep. What if there's no person running against the candidate in the primary? Do they still need to get votes in order to be on the general election ballot?
The candidates that are that have signed up as of June 15th, or somewhere around June 15th, those people from the parties, your party, as far as your party ballot, even unopposed candidates are still placed on the ballot. And in the case of, in case someone wanted to run a write-in campaign where they could try to overcome the number of ballots, the number of ballots that the listed candidate will have, and that almost happened with the Progressive Party a year, 2 years ago, when Annette Smith ran a write-in campaign against Martha Abbott, who was the listed candidate. That's why it's important to get your vote out.
Mm-hmm. So for listeners who might be thinking, oh, it doesn't matter if I vote or not in the primary, it could be important even if you are in a district where there are not any uncontested races.
Absolutely.
So what if a candidate is running a write-in campaign on a primary and there's how many, say there's nobody else on the ballot for that party for that particular office, how many votes do they need to get on the ballot?
What's required is half of the petition requirement. So on a statewide candidate, if you were to run for a statewide office, you would need to have half of the number of ballots. You need to have, as a write-in candidate, if there was no opposition, you would have to have half of those number
petition signatures.
So in the case of a statewide, it's 500 signatures, you would need 250. In the case of where you're up against another opponent who's already listed, then it's just who has the most votes.
Simple majority.
Correct.
Yep. So I just want to remind listeners, we're chatting with Secretary of State Jim Condos, and we're talking about the primary election. If you want to join us, it's 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. So I want to take the last few minutes and talk about a little bit more about how to get an early ballot or to go vote at your town clerk's office. I just want to make sure folks understand the process. So if you could talk about that. I know there's a form on your website that folks can download, and that website is sec.state.vt.us. But just talk a little bit about how does it exactly work? How do you get the ballot? How do you fill it out? How do you get it back?
Well, you can call the town clerk's office, or you can mail in the form in which you've signed it to request a ballot, or you can actually walk into the town clerk's office during their normal business hours up to 45 days prior to the election. And it's pretty simple. It's a, you know, they'll, when you go in and talk to your town clerk, or if you call in by phone, they will put a check next to your name that you've received the ballot, and they'll send the ballot out to you or hand it to you, or they'll mail it to you, whatever. And then you get to fill out your ballot in your privacy of your home and mail it back. It is important to make sure that you use the internal envelope. There's an internal envelope which needs to be filled out and signed, and that ballot has to go in there because we're not supposed to know who voted for what, so that the time that it comes back, all the clerk will do is take that ballot in the envelope and check off your name that they've received your ballot back, and then on election day they'll open the ballot and run it through the machine.
So the votes don't get counted until election day, so there's no way
That's
for
correct.
The candidates to know how they're doing so far when the ballots are coming in early, unless they know that someone has promised, yes, I'll vote for you.
The only way you would know if someone has voted for you is if they tell you that.
Right.
The clerk's not going to know because the ballot envelope is not opened until election day.
And the primary voting works the same way. If you're voting at home or in the town clerk's office, you get all four ballots, and you have to send them all back in, right?
Yes. The I believe that the voted ballot goes in the envelope, and then there's another envelope.
Yeah.
There's another envelope where the unused ballots go into.
So just for listeners, it's really important that you read the directions carefully and make sure you send all those ballots back. Don't recycle them, because they need to see that everything's coming back so somebody else can't use your ballot to send in an extra vote. And I voted in my town clerk's office. If you go in there and you say you want to vote right away, they'll give you a little private space where you can fill everything out and hand them back the sealed envelope
exactly.
to put in the box.
Now, I do want to say one thing, because this is a group of a fairly new group of voters, and that is our young adults, who if a young adult will be 18 by the time the general election comes around, which is November 4th. So if someone will be 18 by the time November 4th rolls around, they can register now and vote in the primary. And this is the result of the constitutional amendment, which was passed in 2010. This was overwhelmingly supported by Vermonters. Over 80% voted for this, and it's been pretty well accepted. So 17-year-olds are allowed to vote in the primary if they will be 18 by the general.
And how long do they have? When's the last day they can register to vote if they want to vote in the primary?
The last day for anyone to register to vote is August 20th, Wednesday before election day, primary day.
Yep. So you have to register by August 20th. If you want to vote early, you have to request that ballot by August 25th at 5 p.m.
Correct.
If you don't make that deadline, you can still go to the polls on August 26th and vote there.
That's right.
And folks can find a list of all the town clerks on the Secretary of State's website, and also all the polling locations on the Secretary of State's website.
We have all that information there for folks, and it's pretty easily found. And, we'll continue to upgrade the system. We're actually in the middle of a technical upgrade to our IT systems for elections that will make it even better in the future.
Are there any downsides to voting early?
The only downside that I can see would be that if you vote early and something were to come up between the time you voted and the election day, you would not be able to go back and change your vote. So once you vote, you have voted. You cannot have your election, your ballot pulled back out. Once it leaves your hands and is in the clerk's hands, it becomes their property at that point.
So make sure you have really made up your mind before
that
you go there
correct.
And cast your ballot. Any last things you want to tell us? Any hot issues coming up at the Secretary of State's office?
Excuse me. I think the important things to remember is that every vote does count. And that your vote is your voice, and this is how our representative form of government in democracy works. That what it all boils down to is voting is very serious, and it is it's the basis and core of our democracy. So it is very, very important.
And your name will be on the one or more of the primary election ballots?
My name will be on the Democratic ballot.
So if folks like the job that Secretary Condos is doing, they can go vote in the Democratic primary for him. And if you vote in another one, you could write his name in, right?
That is correct.
So thank you for joining us today, Secretary Condos, and thanks for the work you're doing over there.
My pleasure, Amy, anytime.
So just to remind listeners, if you want to get more information about elections or anything else the Secretary of State does, you can check out the website at www.sec.state.vt.us. You can find there in the election section the form to request your early ballot if you would like to get one. And you can also find the list of your town clerks and your polling places. And I think it's about time to take a break, so we'll be back in a minute.
They're back to the Orleans County Fairgrounds in Barton for a second great summer. Don't miss the legendary Herman's Royal Limousin Stallions this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, presented by Pool & Grain. Both powerful and elegant, these original Stallions of Austria are a sight to behold, and they're only here for a limited time. This Friday at 5:30, Saturday and Sunday at 3 p.m. Adults $10, kids 6 to 12, and seniors $8. Under 6 free. Complete details online at OrleansCountyFair.net.
At Fairpoint Communications, our passion is helping people and communities connect. We help local universities connect with students taking classes from neighboring towns and beyond, championing online education and opening minds everywhere. We help Northern New England's healthcare facilities connect doctors and hospitals across town or across the country, expanding the resources available to help people stay healthy. And we help families and friends connect, harnessing the strength of our network to call for help in times of need or to simply email happy birthday. That's why since April 2008, Fairpoint has invested over $1 million a week in the communities we serve, developing new technology, new infrastructure, and new services that connect even the most remote communities in Northern New England with the ever-changing, ever-expanding global community. Fairpoint Communications. A connected community is a better community. Learn more at fairpointconnects.com.
Welcome back to Equal Time Radio. I'm Amy Schollenberger. I'm your host for today. I hope you're enjoying learning about the upcoming primary elections. And we're going to be speaking with Dean Corin next, who's a candidate for Vermont Lieutenant Governor. Before we jump in with Dean, I just want to remind you, if you didn't do this on the break, go log in onto Facebook and give Equal Time Radio page a little like. Help us to build up our little fan base there so that you can keep up to date with what's going on with Equal Time Radio. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can call 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Dean Corin, are you on the phone with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So you're running for lieutenant governor.
That's correct.
How's that going so far?
It's going spectacularly. I couldn't have, certainly couldn't have scripted it to go this well. And it's been very exciting, and we're working very hard. And we've, started off with a big bang with, after a little over a month, qualifying for public financing, which makes us, in terms of money, competitive. We may be outspent, but we won't be outspent by much. And so we're competitive in the money race, and that means that the media and everyone else takes you seriously. Fortunately, for me, many of the people around the state who I worked with in the legislature and many others remembered me from my time in the legislature 14 years ago, and also working for Bernie Sanders for 2 years. So people have been incredibly gracious and helpful and energized to get people out around the state to get those qualifiers. And then after that, we got the endorsement of the governor, which was huge, and just had a very, very nice meeting with the Democratic Party, since I'm seeking the Democratic nomination in addition to running as a progressive. And they were very warm, and that's all looking very good, and we're now geared on the primaries, both the progressive and Democratic primaries, and then on from there.
Great. So you just gave a great overview of all the things I want to talk to you about today. So first, though, just tell us a little bit more about yourself. Who are you, and what have you been doing with your life, and what kind of background do you have?
Well, primarily, I'm a technologist. I've been involved in renewable energy and issues around energy since the late 70s when I went to grad school after graduating from Middlebury with an incredibly useful degree in philosophy and also a lot of physics courses that allowed me to get a job as an engineer. Then I went to grad school to do energy and became concerned not only with all sorts of other aspects of energy, but with particularly with regard to global warming, what we used to call the greenhouse effect back in the 70s. And my department was working on that, both on the atmospheric side and on the energy side. So I've been involved in renewable energy one way or another for a long time. Since then, I've developed a number of patents in a number of areas, and since I left the legislature in 2000, I was in the legislature for 8 years, and then I went to work for Bernie Sanders as his outreach director in Vermont when he was in Congress for 2 years, and then I joined a company that is doing the kind of renewable energy I developed in the 80s, starting in the year 2000, and I joined them in 2003, and we do underwater turbines. It's called kinetic hydropower. It captures the power in flowing water from tides or rivers or eventually ocean currents, not unlike wind turbines do from the flowing air. The difference is that it's underwater. Water is very different from air in some ways, very similar in other ways, but so the turbines look quite different, and obviously we're operating underwater, sometimes at great depths, and so it's very challenging, but I think we're going to make it into a viable commercial worldwide technology that's going to employ a fair number of people and provide a few percentages of the world's power.
So it sounds like you've been in Vermont for a long time. Have you been here your whole life, or when did you move here?
Well, I went to school in the 70s in Vermont, and then, as I always said, it was just a matter of time, and I moved back in around 87.
There you go.
And I've been involved since then. I got great opportunity in Burlington, where we have our own public electric utility. The city council and the mayor, who was at the time was Bernie, appointed me to be on the Burlington Electric Commission, and we were able to put into work some of the, you know, relatively new concepts for managing an electric utility that had to do with investing more in efficiency and local jobs than in simply buying power from out of state or building large new power plants and paying off the debt. So we were very successful with that. We were able to grow the Burlington economy very substantially while reducing the energy we used and particularly reducing the peak electricity we used, and therefore we saved a lot of money.
So why are you running for lieutenant governor? Why that office as opposed to state senate or house rep?
Well, I've been in the House of Representatives, and you know, in the state of Vermont, the House and the Senate aren't all that different. The Senate obviously is smaller, and therefore each senator covers a wider area and has more power. But essentially, Vermont could have a unicameral system with one house rather than two, but we make things a little bit more challenging and look at legislation on different levels between the House and the Senate. But the main reason I'm in this race right now on a statewide basis is our situation with regard to health care. When I was in the legislature, I was one of the authors of a single-payer bill that laid out the basics for how we could proceed with a system that would cover all Vermonters and save a lot of money, and also, you know, change that curve of growth so that we would not have these constantly escalating costs. And as a result, businesses more and more have been dropping health care because, number one, they can't afford it, and number two, they can't afford the overhead that it takes for every single individual business to try to figure out what plans will work for their employees. So part of what single-payer or comprehensive health care is all about is covering everyone in the simplest, administratively simplest kind of way, and saving a lot of money in that way, and also freeing employees to do what economically works best for them, and freeing businesses to do their own businesses and not have to deal with health care each one at a time.
So why do you think the office of lieutenant governor is the right place for that issue that you're so passionate about? What does the lieutenant governor do that you think can help to move that issue forward?
Well, I just think that the office of lieutenant governor can do a lot more. We have a situation now where we have a good law committing us to the path of single payer because we've done so many studies that indicate that it's the only thing that makes any sense for our economy and the people of Vermont. And the people of Vermont want it. You know, I was just up in Franklin County. I was talking to a Republican legislator there who said, my people want health care. So it's not a matter of any longer of simply saying, well, I don't know, I'm skeptical, I'm going to wait and see. We can't wait and see anymore. We're decades down the road. When I was in the legislature, we were looking at costs escalating, total costs escalating to over $1.5 billion. Well, we're now over $5 billion, and costs have not abated, and they're not going to abate until we really have a comprehensive plan where we can get our hands around all healthcare spending and decide our own priorities as a state, as a people of Vermont, rather than the priorities being decided by insurance company boards in Connecticut. So this is how we can save money. We've got to move forward. And right now we have a governor who is truly leading, who I have to give tremendous credit for. He's not just supportive. He's truly leading. And there's a ton of work to do. And in order to get that work done, it would be awfully nice if all the statewide office holders were pushing in the same direction to get it done. Sure, there will be differences over how you do it, but it's way too late to say, well, I'm going to wait and see what happens. We all have to roll up our sleeves and get to work. And I think the fact that I've been involved in this issue for so long, even though it's not my business, and what I did in the legislature before and my approach of getting things done even when we disagree, I think is why the governor endorsed me.
So just for listeners who might not be in the State House every day and might be wondering exactly what a lieutenant governor does, let's just talk about that a little bit. The lieutenant governor essentially runs the Senate. He's president of the Senate, has a pretty major role in deciding how things get considered in the Senate. What else, what other aspects of the office do you see playing a role in this health care debate?
Well, those narrow roles include, as you alluded to, being on the Committee of Committees in the Senate and helping decide which senators are on which committees, which is critically important to moving legislation forward. And the whole tone and approach of how the Senate works, the lieutenant governor has a key role in setting. Beyond that, and beyond filling in for the governor when the governor is traveling, the lieutenant governor has a pretty open portfolio and is pretty free to decide which issues to get involved in. Now, normally I would be involved in a whole range of issues having to do with renewable energy and the environment and moving the state forward more aggressively to deal with those issues and climate change, specifically with regard to having to do those things to protect and expand our economy and other technology-oriented things and things that involve training of Vermonters so they can stay here and work. But in this case, with the timing right now and this opportunity to move healthcare forward, that is the overriding concern. And I think that the lieutenant governor can play a tremendous role in helping craft the solutions to all the various problems that have to go into that new system, but then also traveling around the state and listening to Vermonters and also explaining how that system would work and how they can have a role to play in deciding how that system works over time.
And, of course, one big role that may or may not come up is the lieutenant governor breaks ties if there's a 15-15 vote there in the Senate.
That's right. That's another of the specified roles of the lieutenant governor. And, of course, by the nature of it, it only takes place when it's something quite controversial.
So just to shift gears a little bit more to the campaign, I was looking at your website, and I noticed that you have a donate button, but it's crossed off. I assume that's because you got your public financing. Can you talk a little bit about what public financing is, how it works, how you got it, and what it's doing for your campaign?
Right. Well, I should say that website was set up very quickly because when I decided to run and decided to attempt to get public financing, there were only 38 days left in which to do that by June 12th. And we hit the ground running at full speed with that is still essentially a temporary website. And it will be replaced in a week or two by a much more professional website. But that one got the job done, and as soon as we did qualify, which was the day before the deadline, so it took us 37 days, and we had 38 days in which to do it, we put that cross out on the donate button. It's really funny because supporters still offer to contribute money because people who are in the habit of contributing political money are still in that habit, but we cannot accept any more money. In fact, the money that came in after the deadline we sent back. But we did collect over the necessary amount of $17,500. We collected a bit over $19,000. And that goes into the campaign. And the balance of the campaign finance law, which allots $200,000 for the entire election, $50,000 for the primary, and $150,000 for the general. The balance, about $181,000, comes out of the Vermont Campaign Fund. And so that will be available for this election. And it's available, it's the public's money, and we're using it to put out the message about this particular candidate and what I stand for and what I plan to do. It's a role for public money to put out that information. And it's much better than having candidates who are beholden to large private contributions. And it is really a model for all elections in Vermont. And we've done a press conference where we proposed that all House members and all Senate members and all statewide officers be publicly funded. We can't, under the current situation with the U.S. Supreme Court saying that money is speech and therefore wealthy people have the right to drown out the voices of ordinary people or lower income people, which we think is completely wrong. We think it's actually the opposite. But under that, until the Supreme Court has changed, the best antidote we have is to have public financing. So anyone who meets a certain level of credibility and meets those requirements, which are tough, but appropriately so, and has that credibility, then they can get their message out equally to someone who's funded by corporations and PACs.
So I just want to remind listeners, we're talking with Dean Corin, who's a candidate for the Vermont Lieutenant Governor position, and you can check out his currently temporary, soon-to-be more professional website at www.deancorin.com. So, Dean, you're running as a progressive.
Right.
Tell us why you chose to run under the Progressive Party and talk a little bit more. You mentioned earlier that you went and met with the Democrats a few days ago and asked them for their support. Tell us how that works as well.
Right. Well, it may sound a little strange, but the fact is I am a progressive. I'm one of the founders of the Progressive Party, and the Progressive Party stands for things that I think it was always aimed at, even though it's a small third party, it was always aimed at becoming more and more successfully a major party in Vermont, which it is, because the policies that it pursues are those that benefit the majority of Vermonters. Now, the Progressive Coalition before the party was formed was around for a long, long time, even before, in some incarnations before Bernie Sanders' original election to the mayoralty of Burlington in 1981. But it wasn't actually founded as a formal party until the late 90s. Has grown since then. We have a few members in the House, and now we have a few members in the House and Senate. And some of those people share a progressive label and a Democratic label. And we feel that the Democratic Party has had a lot of successes lately, growing and growing in success. And it's probably more successful now than when Phil Hoff was elected as governor a long, long time ago. So I clearly feel that some of the, all of the initial hostilities between the two parties that existed back in the 80s are long gone. We've had a number of successes together, working together, everything from this health care law that we currently have to GMO labeling. And the two parties working together can have even more successes for both parties. It's not a zero-sum game. One doesn't take away from the other. We have so many overriding things to do just for healthcare alone that we really need to get together and work together. And I'm happy to say that when I spoke to the State Committee of the Democratic Party, they were incredibly welcoming and warm. And we are working very hard to not only get the progressive nomination on the primary ballot, where I'm printed on, but also the write-in campaign for the Democratic Party in the August 26th primary. We're trying very hard to win that nomination also. And then under the current plan, I will be going back to the Democratic Party to ask for their endorsement on top of their nomination. So things are looking very good for all of that, but we have a lot of hard work to do, and people around the state are being organized and are doing a true grassroots campaign.
So let's just talk about the primary ballot a little bit. Before you came on with us, we had Secretary of State Condos on, and he was explaining to people how they can vote in the primary. So folks are pretty up to speed on how to get their ballot and how to vote on August 26th. But let's talk about what the ballot will actually look like. So if you happen to be a progressive and you decide you're going to vote in the progressive primary and you go to the lieutenant governor slot, you're going to see the name Dean Korn. Will there be any other names there? Is anybody running against you in the progressive primary?
No.
So you need people, if they support you, to actually check that box on the progressive
ticket. Oval, typically.
Yep.
And right.
Now, if someone is a Democrat and they go to vote in the primary and they decide they would like to support you, how would that work?
Well, they won't see any name printed on the ballot if they take the Democratic primary ballot because the fellow, John Bauer, who was running, was trying to run as a Democrat, dropped out when I qualified for public financing, and he didn't. He is a real strong believer in public financing, and he thought that for someone with such similar views on health care and on public financing as himself, he didn't want to split the vote, so he dropped out, and that's why there's no one written on the ballot. So if someone wants to vote for me in the Democratic primary, when they take that ballot, all they have to do is fill in the circle or oval that says write in, and then write my name in, Dean Korn.
So folks can do that if you want to support Dean Korn in the primary coming up on August 26th. So the last few minutes I want to talk about, you've been campaigning for a while now, but I think you have a campaign kickoff, an official kickoff coming up. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I do. We have a kickoff scheduled for August 16th. That's a Saturday at 1 o'clock in the State House. And we will, prior to that, we'll have an organizing meeting of people from around the state who are working on the campaign, and they will get together and have pizza and make plans. And then at 1 o'clock, we will have the kickoff, and it will be emceed. It will be co-emceed by a fellow named Ben and another fellow named Jerry, who people know very well in the state of Vermont. And we'll have a number of featured guests who will be speaking, and I'll be speaking, but we'll keep it very brief so that we can get to the ice cream that those fellows make.
So say the details again. If people want to come, what do they have to do?
The kickoff itself will be at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on August 16th, Saturday, at the State House. It'll be in room 11, but that'll be obvious when people come in. And then after that, we will have ice cream probably on the portico. So even if it rains, we'll be out of the rain, and we can enjoy our ice cream.
And you won't be asking for donations for the campaign.
Because not a penny.
You're not allowed, right?
That is one of the joys of this campaign. No phone calls about money, just phone calls about issues that people care about, and trying to drum up every bit of support we can.
So what else are you doing in the campaign to get out and talk to folks around the state? What kinds of activities are you doing? What kind of help are you looking for? What makes your campaign different than, say, some of the other campaigns, since you have this public financing? How are you spending the money?
Well, we're not spending a lot of money yet, but we are spending some. We'll be doing things like bus ads and our new website and those kinds of things, all very conventional these days. We have Facebook and Twitter and all those things that are relatively new but really mostly old hat by now. But the main thing is to get out around the state, and we've been going to the various field days. We've had a great time at a number of field days. We're going to be last week we were in Franklin, and we've also been doing parades. We're at the Barry Heritage Parade. Unfortunately, the Montpelier Parade got lightninged out, but we were still hanging around there meeting with people in any case. Next Saturday we'll be at Addison field days, and those things are just terrific for meeting everybody, and that includes the local elected officials and a lot of old friends from the legislature, too, so that's really fun also. But people have been great, and people really are responding to the message of health care and getting it done and getting it done right, but also people do like the concept of public finance, that they own their election and no one else.
What kind of things are people saying to you when you're meeting them at the field days and at the parades and stuff? I've been around with candidates at those kinds of public events. I'm always amazed at some of the things that people say. They're so up to date on issues, and sometimes you're surprised by that. What kinds of things are you hearing from folks on the ground?
Well, a lot of it has to do with healthcare and the need to move forward, and also the current quagmire with CGI, which just got terminated today, or is in the process of being terminated. Software vendor that messed up the Vermont Health Connect, which, by the way, is very, very different from what we're going to have, which is much, much simpler once we have single payer, where a lot of that complexity that exists now is because you have multiple insurance companies and all sorts of different levels of work, all related to who's covered for what and when, and all of that goes away, at least most of it goes away with regard to Vermont citizens once we have our own single-payer system. So a lot of it is concern about that, and actually a lot of it is concern about the perception of that, whereas people really know and really want genuine health care rather than just a complicated system of insurance coverage. So that's really got to be number one. The other big thing that people are talking about, for example, I also gave a lecture on my kind of energy, which really isn't used, can't really be used in Vermont. Our rivers are not big enough, and we're not on the ocean shore. But I gave a lecture at Solarfest on kinetic hydropower. And, of course, a lot of people there, but really a lot of people everywhere around the state are concerned about energy and the growth of renewable energy in the form of solar thermal and photovoltaics is something that a lot more people are looking at because of the incentives and because it's more cost-effective than ever before. People have a really strong desire in Vermont to get our energy indigenously by ourselves, self-sufficiently, and do our part to avoid further global warming from fossil fuel use.
So it sounds like you're having some pretty intense conversations out there in Vermont.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very intense conversations.
Do you have any staff on your campaign?
Excuse me?
Do you have any staff on your campaign?
Yes, we do. We have a couple of consultant types who are just working part-time. All Vermonters, everything is Vermont. Everything we can, who we hire are Vermonters and who, and any source for any of the materials. Unless it's absolutely impossible, are from Vermont, and I think everything so far is. So we have two folks that are working part-time and two folks that are on salary. But we are very frugal. We're trying to make that $200,000 do the job of $250,000 because, our opponent will probably raise $250,000 or more.
So if folks want to help you out, get involved and volunteer, beside, and say they can't make it to your campaign kickoff, even though there's free ice cream there, how can folks get involved?
The easiest way is the same website you said, deancoren.com. And there, very soon, there will be great functionality in terms of signing up to do to get the newsletter, to do lawn signs, posters, all that kind of thing, and to work in their local community. People will be contacted by local coordinators all around the state.
Great. Okay. Dean, thank you so much for joining us. I'd like to give you just a few seconds to say any last remarks that you have, and then we're going to have to say goodbye.
Well, I appreciate this opportunity very much. I guess I should just say that this is obviously not a presidential election year, but people participating in their democracy is just as important this year as any other, and it's very important to us and to moving the policies of Vermont forward that people come out and vote in the primary if they belong to a party or feel they belong to a party. They can choose any party they want to vote in. And then in the general election, it's very critical that people get out and vote because we have a real choice here in terms of policies. So it's important that people make their voice heard.
Well, thank you, Dean, and thank you, listeners. And don't forget to vote August 26th.
You're listening to locally owned and operated 96.1 WDEV FM in Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier, the friendly pioneer. Serving the kingdom at FM 101.9 from Island Pond. 2 o'clock, world and national news update, and then 2 hours of music with The Getaway.
AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire, former...